around the 18th century, end of 18th century, and the beginning of the 19th century, the English had taken control over India. And before them, it was the Muslims that were ruling over India. So the Muslims had several things to put up with. One is, how do we sustain our deen? And number two is, how do we sustain ourselves materially? Hence, there were several movements. Amongst the movements that were very active at that time were the Ulama of Deoband. They had the greater concern of the deen of the people. Not that they disregarded the dunya, they had a respect for the dunya of the people, that the dunya should be also saved. But the greater concern was, how do we save their deen? So hence they had employed several ways to save and protect the deen of people. Initially they had engaged the British in jihad. Up to now the British remember them for the mutiny. In Urdu they call it the Ghadr, in English they call it the mutiny. Up to now in the Google etc. you will find this. So this was around the beginning of the 19th century and the ending of the 18th century. The Ulama of Deoband realized that just working on one front would be insufficient. Because if you can only work on the front of jihad, right, it's possible that in time to come we get the English out. But the Muslim presently is not so strong. He's not so strong and he can be broken down. We will work with these Muslims, we will work them against the British. But what stops the British from bribing, from corruption, from winning people over to their side? So we're progressing on this side, and on that side we are losing out. That's the first difficulty that they had. And the second difficulty they had was that to end up this jihad would be requiring quite a bit of time. In the process, there'll be millions of Muslims who will not know anything about their deen. They have lost out in their deen completely, lost out, don't know anything about their deen. So they're going to die in ignorance. They will die as jahils. So they lost out both in deen, they lost out both in deen and their dunya. So for some time they said, alright, we'll leave this jihad now. Not that we are discontinuing it, we will leave this now and we'll get into education, promote deen from this front. The advantage of promoting deen from the front of education was that legally nobody can put a stop to that. Nobody can put an end to it. And then if Allah Ta'ala wills, if anybody wants to continue the jihad, we are teaching them. In the madrasa, we are educating them. So he knows his obligations, he knows his duties. If he wants to engage, he can engage. Nobody is stopping him. Number two, his deen will be secured. So we'll work from this direction, that we'll teach them and pass deen on to them. But we will teach them deen in a different way, not in a university style. University style is that the teacher walks into the class, he delivers the topic, delivers the lesson and he's gone. So there is no real rapport between the teacher and the student. Here we will teach adult students, but in a different style, in a unique style altogether. We'll make them such that at the end of the whole course, they will lose interest in dunya. They will not have that serious attraction towards the world. Their whole concern will be deen and akhirat. So this will be the primary concern of these people. They are not concerned about dunya. Their greater concern is deen. Hence these students, when they will get out of the madrasa, then they are not worried about a name. They are not worried about any type of acknowledgement, nor are they worried about any type of material gain. The only concern, the greater concern, the greatest concern is deen and the preservation of deen. So they started off this madrasa, and then Khanqa movements, and from this madrasa then you see a Tabligh Jamaat movement also sprung up from the same thing, because Muhammad Ilyas is also a student from Deoband. So this also sprung up again from here. So they covered the Muslims in different directions. They covered them as far as the education is concerned. They pulled them out of darkness, of ignorance. Then to inculcate the true values, the true spirit and the true love of deen, they did that. So they had that love, that burning spirit and that love for deen. Hazrat Mawla Hussain Ahmad Madani Sahib Rahmatullah Alayhi, he was also very active in this whole movement. So he was called back to Deoband to come and teach. He was residing in Medina Munawara. His parents all had migrated to Medina Munawara, and he had also the rights to live there. He had a passport and a valid right to be living there. So they called him and they insisted that he must come. So he came back, he returned, but under certain conditions. That I have to work this mission of my teachers, the Shaykh Ul-Hind Rahmatullah Alayh. They work to get out the English. So I will work for this. In the course of my effort, it may be that some days of the madrasa will be missing out. So if you are accepting me with this condition, you can also take a cut in my salary, it's all right. I'm prepared for that, but nothing will stop me from working as my elders had worked. So they accepted him, the madrasa had accepted him, and then when they had accepted him, so he had given an opening address at that time, and in that address he explained, he says, there are two things that motivate a person to work. One is fear. I got you at gunpoint, and I've got you in bondage or in slavery. So out of fear you are working. You're under the whip, under the shambok, and you are working, right? So he says that the might and the main of the English could not deter me from my cause. What can Deoband frighten me? And what can the madrasa frighten me to work? The might and the main of the English, the bombs and the guns, and all the ammunition, etc., could not scare me from my cause. They could not scare me, they could not deter me from my cause. Then, one was the ammunition, the bombs, etc., could not scare me to work. Even their wealth could not motivate me to work. Because I was offered thousands and thousands. All I needed to do, just to keep quiet, not to speak against the English, this was what they had offered me. Again, this also did not motivate me from my cause, did not turn me away from my cause. I remained stuck on my cause. So he says, Darulum Deoband is inviting me to come and teach. Right? They don't have the power to turn me away with their might and the main, nor do they have the power to motivate me to work because of the wealth and the power and affluence. Both they don't have. Because here they have millions and billions, they offer all that to me. And at the start off, they'll give me a couple of millions, and then each month they'll give me a couple of thousands. In that zaman I'm talking of. When money was so tight that an average salary was about 100 rupees. At that time they were offering me millions. So the might and their main couldn't deter me from my cause. their wealth and their glory could not motivate me. All they asked me to do, I mustn't speak out against English, that is all. And we'll give you this couple of millions every year, plus every month we'll give you a salary. All we want you to do is not to speak out against English. That's all we want you. Nothing more than that. So nothing could deter me from my cause. So what can Darulum offer me? They can't scare me, and they can't motivate me through the wealth. Yes, he says, if there is a motivating factor that can motivate me, then it is the remembrance of my ancestors, what they have left behind, and the fact that I owe an obligation to them. For that, I've got no answer for that. It's my elders that have left this institute. This was their whole mindset, right? It was their mindset, and I owe it to them. I owe an obligation that I carry on and continue with the heritage. So they had a heritage that they had left behind. So what was their heritage? What was all this Dioban all in aid for? It was not just to move out the English. Mawlana Manazir Ahsan Gilani Rahmatullah Ali, he says, the whole mindset of Dioban was what? It was that which the pioneer, that is Muhammad Qasim Nanutvi Sahib Rahmatullah Ali, whatever his intentions were, that is supposed to be the right intention. The intention was to conform to the same intention that Mawlana Qasim Sahib Rahmatullah Ali had at the time of the mutiny. The intention was to save the Muslim, to save complete Islam, to get Islam complete, not only in India, but to as far as we can. As far as we can, to protect Islam and to bring it to the purest level, to the absolute purest level. Whatever it takes you to bring it, it takes jihad, it takes education, it takes khanqah, it takes whatever, but you must make every effort to bring Islam to the original state. So that was his whole aim, that was his ambition, that was the whole goal. Right. So I will endeavor, I will try, I will strive for that. No matter what comes, Hazrat Shaykh Ibn Rahmat Lali, when he was aging, and then they asked him, how do you wish to die? So he says, a lot of people have a lot of aspirations to die, someone in Makkah, someone in Medina, Munawara, and that death is a blessed death, nobody disputes that. But I hope and I desire that my death comes in such a way that my body is split up in pieces, one is lying in one place, one is lying in another place, another part of my body is lying in another place, I'm broken to pieces, all in the effort of deen, and my whole body is split and broken apart, all in different, scattered in different places. So he was burning with that fire, that I'm going to do something for deen, preserve this deen, bring it to that level, whatever it takes after that. My body dies, I'm broken down totally into pieces, but the deen must come up. So that was the height. You know, we talk of ikhlas and all that, and sincerity, we like not even kindergarten students before that. Really, when I say it literally, we're not even like kindergarten students. So anyway, this was one effort. That was the Diobandi effort, and it continued. Allah Ta'ala took a lot of work out of them. Al-Mawlana Qasim Sahib Rahmatullah Ali, he started off the work, and then you find millions and millions, literally millions of maktabs, madrasas, all flourishing throughout the world. And it continued. However they started, but they continued and they flourished. In the words of Mawlana Umarji Rahmatullah Ali, you say, Ikhlas Sada Bahar. When you've got the ingredient of ikhlas and sincerity, then you will be evergreen. You'll be evergreen. You must just add the ingredient of ikhlas in all your work, in all your endeavor. See to it that it's no name, it's no fame, it's no wealth. See? Any person wants to do any dini work, and especially an alim, then these two elements he must be very careful of. Popularity and wealth. Popularity and wealth, it will come all the way. You are taking a few steps and popularity again comes. It haunts you. Then you are taking a few steps, then it's wealth that comes. So your mind must be totally away from wealth and again and totally against popularity. You don't want any publicity. No publicity. You're not worried about publicity. Your work and your mind is with blinkers, it's only deen. Preservation of deen, Islam. And it's at its pure, pristine form, like it was in the time of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, to bring it to that level. Then whatever it takes me to reach up to that goal, I must be prepared for that. Then I mustn't make lame excuses, no, this is not right, I'm weak, I'm like this. And whatever it takes, you must be able to do it, you must be prepared to do it. Qasim Sahib rahmatullahi, he's dying, literally he's dying. And at that time, then some Christian and some Hindu put up a challenge. They have to actually carry him. And he goes up to the point and he attends that munazara. And he sees that opposition, that fear was there, his kanj is broken down. And then only he did it. But at that time he was dying already. But there was nobody to stand up to the challenge. So he went up there. He said, no, Islam requires me to be there, I'm going to be there. He attended that munazara, he attended that debate, defeated that person, let him run for his life, and then came back. But in the process, millions of people's iman got saved. We don't know about Indian history, therefore we don't appreciate what was done by them. Around that time, Shiaism was very, very strong. Very, very, very strong. You talk about the 18th, 19th century, it was very strong. And it was these people and the movement before them, Sayyid Ahmad Shaheed Sahib Rahmatullahi, both of them, they worked. They worked. Night and day they worked. And they got these things eliminated. It's their barakat today that we are in Sunnat. We are Ahl Sunnat wal Jamaat because of their barakat. At the end also, Mawla Ismail Shaheed Sahib Rahmatullahi, Mawla Ahmad Shaheed Rahmatullahi, both, they are striving. And Mawla Ismail Shaheed Sahib Rahmatullahi, because he is the sort of the advisor of Mawla Ahmad Shaheed Rahmatullahi, and he says, now, just allow me, give me that permission that I can go into the throes of the enemy. And Sayyid Ahmad Sahib stops him and says, no, I need you, just remain back. And he went up again and he says, I just wish to offer this dear head of mine in the name of Allah Ta'ala. Just allow me this dear head of mine, I might just give it in the name of Allah Ta'ala. And then he went and he's beheaded. And then shortly after that, his Shaykh Sayyid Ahmad Shaheed also was beheaded. So they did everything. Whatever was within the capacity, whatever was within the means, they did. And we are eating of their fruits. But they did all this, whatever they did for the preservation of deen. And I tell you very sincerely, that if it wasn't for them, there wouldn't have been any Islam. They have got a distorted view and a distorted form of Islam. They worked and they worked. Under all circumstances, food, no food, threats, difficulties, problems coming their way. See? On the one side, it's such a good life, you can be living in Medina Munawwar, you got a passport, you can stay there. And then the thought comes, like in Gharibana Hind ka kya hoga? What's going to happen to these poor people in India? They are poor, bereft from deen, perhaps dunya wise, they are quite strong. But what's going to happen to their deen? I leave all this with due respects. I must come and live with these people here, work for them, and preserve their deen. So we don't know really what difficulties they have gone through. We have got it on the plate. So we take their efforts and their striving very, very mildly. In a note of humor a little bit, in that day, Hazrat Shaykh al-Islam, Mawla Hussain Ahmad Madani Rahmatullah, was called up to Burma to deliver a talk. So anyway, he came up and then they told him, see, we had applied for you to come to Burma and the authorities, the English authorities had allowed your coming. But with this condition that you mustn't speak out against the English. Don't speak out against the oppression, against how they persecuted and killed 50,000 ulama-i kiram and hang them up on the trees and all that. So don't speak about that. And we give you the passport to come here. You'll be able to come and deliver the talks. So Mu'a said, all right, if that's the case, then let me go back. If I'm coming in with this type of a condition, then let me go back. I'll go back with my own expense, but let me go back. So those hosts, they said, hey, you know, Mu'a, this can't happen. All right, we put our heads on the block. Whatever happens, happens, but you have to deliver the talk. So Mu'a stood up on the minbar and started his talk. And he says, you see, my hosts, they had taken a pledge with the English government that I will not speak out anything against the government. So they being my host, I am being the guest, I have to honor their pledges. I can't disregard their pledge. I have to respect their pledge. But had they not taken this pledge with the government, I would have said, at this date, on this time, this was the persecution and oppression of the English. Right? But because they have pledged, therefore I'm not saying it. And again, he numbered the second one, and the third one, hundreds of their persecution, how they killed, butchered, how they starved India, how they starved the millions of tons of grain from India. India is being starved, and all that is being pushed to England and all the Western countries. Here, the poor people here are being starved. People that are living with the trade of their hands, right? And they depend on the trade of their hands. Their thumbs are being cut off, that they can't do any trade with their hands. Okay? So that was a level of persecution, oppression. Well, I couldn't take it. How could he ever take it? He said, no. I'll have to work out. Work and work, whatever comes. So Mullah spoke about all the oppression and the persecution. He says, now see, because they have taken a pledge, so therefore I am not speaking out against them. But if they had not taken a pledge, then I would have said that these people that did this and this and this, on this occasion, this is the recorded evidence of what they have done. So this was on their side, what they had done. So the right thing, as the Shaykh Hindran says, that my intention, when I've heard this from my teacher, Mawlana Qasim Saab, rahmatullahi, that this is my intention. But thereafter we find that the people of Dioband, they went into different groups. Some went, they only tried to correct Amal, like how you find a Khanqa or something, only to rectify the Amal, Ikhlas, etc. And I don't dispute with them, right? Someone went just into education to improve the levels of education from one level to the second level. I got no fight with them. I got no qualms with them. They can do what they are doing. Someone is just improving Amal. Someone is just improving the education level. And someone is just trying to mobilize the Muslims, bring them together. That also, I got no qualms, I got no fight with them. They're going in one direction, the second is going in another direction, the third is going in another direction. So I got no qualms with them, they're all on deen. But I still don't feel comfortable, minus the intention of my Ustad, Mawlana Qasim Saab, rahmatullahi, whatever his intention was, I had to conform with that. The whole deen must come out. I don't want any recognition, I don't want any position, I don't want anything. I don't want to become a very substantial and a university that is well known throughout the world. No, I don't want that. I don't want just that it must be a khanqa, that people just only improve the actions and deeds only. I don't want that they must just mobilize, I want that entire deen, complete, absolute, complete, perfect, in its pure form, it must come up again. So I'm going to fight tooth and nail to bring up Islam to that level. So he says, if my ustad did that, then that's my intention. If anybody has taken a different line, he's went onto a diverse path, then be it as it may, I will honor him, I will respect him, I will cooperate with him. But my path, my direction will be still the same as it was started off and pioneered by my teacher, by my ustad. I will keep it like that. So the long and the short of the whole intention is that whatever deen requires of you at whichever time, you are prepared to do it. Today deen requires you to be doing patrol, you are doing it. Tomorrow it requires you to give a bayan, you are doing it. The other day the deen requires of you that you are in the kitchen, in the mess, you are doing it. The fourth day it requires of you that you're doing some khidmat for some person that is handicapped, or for some widow and some orphan, you are doing that. So whatever deen requires of you at whichever time, you are prepared for that. You aren't looking for any goals, academically you must be progressing like this. And in education you must be progressing like this. You are not looking for that goal. You are looking for that glory. You are looking for the fact that deen must come up again. Whatever it takes you after that. So this is how they worked, this is how they strived. So we need to go get into the history, see how they worked, what were their aims, what were their goals, that we will have a better picture of a big better picture and better sight of their work. Now then you came You come across an individual like Sir Sayyid Ahmad, the founder of Aligarh University. We will respect him in that his intentions were good. We won't say that his intentions were corrupt. Intention was how the Muslim can be sustained financially, materially, how can Islam be sustained, how can Muslim be sustained, more just financially and economically. What can we do for the economical sustaining and preservation of the economy? How can we preserve that? So that was the greater concern, that the Muslim economy, Islam and the economic side of Islam, that must be preserved. So in order to do that, he had to mince his words somewhere. Somewhere he had to curry favor with the English. He do some things that may be in conformity with the English so that his work can continue. The university at Aligarh can continue. So, but he made some major discrepancies, major wrongs. His intentions, we don't dispute his intentions. At heart, he was a good person. But in order to get there, then he had to make some severe compromises. Very great compromises he had to make. So our ulama tried to correct him. They tried to rectify him. That your intentions we don't dispute, we respect your intentions. But the path that you have taken of compromising, etc., that we're not in agreement with. At the beginning, when he started off his university, like how we have this Islamic schools and all, more or less the same principles, ways, etc., everything was more or less the same. There's no difference, because here also there's a lot of compromise, here also there's a lot of mixing, and there also there's a lot of mixing of things. So when they started off, so Sir Sayyid sent some of his personal men to Maulana Rashid Ahmad Gangohi Sahib Rahmatullah Alayh, that, you know, we're starting off this university and we need you to guide this whole thing. You must be the patron, you must be the guide, you must show us how to take this on. How to continue with this, you must show us. So Maulana Gangohi Sahib Rahmatullah says that, see, I don't know much about these type of things, but it's better that you speak to Maulana Qasim Sahib Rahmatullah Alayh, because he is quite well versed with this type of situations. So anyway, they went up to Maulana Qasim Sahib Rahmatullah Alayh and they presented the whole case before him, that we started off this thing, we're embarking on this university, it is to sustain the Muslim, and we want you to guide the whole thing. So Maulana says that, you see, many of the points in your constitution are all flawed. So they replied, this is why we want you, that those points that are flawed, then you will come and rectify them. So Maulana was a very witty person, very, very witty person. You couldn't get Maulana through bribery, even bribery in words, you see. So now we want you, why want you? You know, you will guide us. So that's also a type of bribery in words. So Maulana said, you see, your intentions are bright and great, but your outlook is quite different. When your outlook is quite different, then we will not be able to conform with you. And the illustration, the example for what you want, you know, you want to reconcile this whole thing, that we should be guiding the whole thing, and you do this, you know, you do this so that you can sustain the economy of the Muslims, etc., in whichever way you are trying to preserve it, then the example for this is like a person has got a whole drum full of syrup, you know, golden syrup he's got, sugar syrup he's got, and he's pouring it into a lemon tree, right, expecting the lemon that is coming out to be sweet. Will it ever happen? It won't happen. So, though you're employing me for doing this type of work, but your whole outlook is bitter, is like that lemon, right? Your outlook is different. So, with that bitter outlook, that wrong outlook of yours, no matter how you're going to nourish this tree, it's going to go bitter. It's not going to go straight. It's not going to take the direction I want. So, the same happens to this type of schools and all that. You can just use them as a convenience. Islamic schools, you just use them as a convenience. They can't be a guide. They can't be the one that is going to be the precedent in Islam. They can't give it. Why they can't give it is because the way they have engineered, the way they have structured it, their whole structuring is that how many A's we have got, and how many matriculants did we get in this year, right? So in order to get there, they will do things, they will bend things, they will bend the rules, etc. But the aim is to get there. Though it is to preserve the Muslim, but in order to get there, they will be bending rules. They will be breaking the rules. See? In breaking the rules, you're trying to get there. So obviously you're defeating the plot. Now, for example, in order to advertise that, right, advertise all this, sometimes they will have to have their photos coming up in the newspapers, right? Men and women photos are coming up, right? So the women have become so cheap that the women are advertising themselves in the newspapers, right? So cheap. Where we say, most precious commodities are women, and we don't want to advertise them in public. Now, in order to advertise this whole model, you have to take it to the press as well, right? Then if you have a get-together, right? You have a get-together, then on the stage, you will find, again, men and women. Where men are giving a delivery, then women are giving a delivery as well, see? So that women also are addressing the whole crowd. So we will not dispute that your intention is to sustain and protect and preserve the Islamic economy. But the route that you are taking, really, we don't agree with that. So when we don't agree with that, we'll have to tell you at the outset that we don't agree with this route. So just excuse us, we'll be away from this. See? Because we can't mix up. Our obligation to Nabi Sam is greater than our obligation to you. Material is an important thing, but it's not as important as our obligation to Hazrat Nabi Sallam. Our obligation to Nabi Sallam, the place that we have taken to him, with him, is that we will remain pure. We won't mix up and contaminate things. So the way that you have taken, now we're going to be contaminating the ideals and the guidelines that Nabi Sallam had given us. So we don't want this contamination. We will say that your intention is good. What you want to do is good. We will not say that it's bad. We won't say it's evil. But the process that you are adopting is definitely contaminated. So we'll say it's contaminated, and we'll show you where it's contaminated. So, in brief today, what I've explained, by the grace of Allah Ta'ala, is this whole Deoband movement, how it started off, what was the reason for starting it off, and the obligation that we have towards this institute, what it has done for the preservation of Islam and for the Muslims, not only in India and Pakistan, but I would say in most part of the world. Because from then, you see, you're talking from 1850, then you find Muslims from after 1850, from India and Pakistan, they have traveled different parts of the world, right? Wherever you find Islam today, whether it's in Australia, in America, in England, or South Africa, you'll find that it is largely, you'll find the Indians and moreover the Indians that are connected to this Deobandi movement that are active. Any part of the world, you show me one part of the world that the Deobandi movement is not active, is not like the root of the effort. Show me one part of the world. Besides the Arab states, show me one part of the world where you will find that this group here is not connected to the dini activity. Whether it's a tabligh jamaat, whether it's a madrasa, whether it is khanqa, whether somehow or the other, directly or indirectly, they are linked up here. So we need to know our roots, and we need to know their intentions, so that we can conform. Otherwise, we would go on a different tangent altogether, and we will miss out the cause that they had started off. Allah Ta'ala tawfiq nasib.